Welcome to the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We provide education and information on senior care topics. Here's your host, Ryan McInniff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We give you information and education on senior care topics. My name is Ryan McInniff. I am not only the host of the Caregiver's Toolbox, but the owner of Minute Women Home Care, a private home care agency located in Lexington, Massachusetts. I am joined here by Janet, who is sitting in her seat because I have crumbs and stuff that are on the floor that our dog and trusty co-host Jackson is chewing on right now. But hopefully he'll be safe for the next time. And he's still got some.
Looks like he's smoking a pipe.
God, this dog is a mess. Anyways, he's a good dog, Jackson.
He is.
Just don't choke on anything, at least for the next hour or two. Anyways, Janet, how are you?
I am well.
Excellent.
My day feels like it's half over. It started a little after 5, but it's a good day.
Mine starts around 4:30, 5 o'clock every morning.
God bless you.
Yeah, well, you know. I'm in bed real early. So, Jackson's distracting us. But
yes,
the reason for this podcast today is that yesterday we did a very long podcast on an article that was in the Boston Globe, written by a woman named Linda Matchin, where she had not only personal experience, but a lot of facts to back up her statements with some of the problems that are going on with home care. And there's certainly, we felt, if you listen to that there were a lot of truths in that. Overall, we thought it was a good thing. It shed light on an industry in which there is some shady things going on. There are some illegal operations going on. And the less of those there are, the better it is for everybody that is trying to do the right thing and trying to get the right care. In some ways, you know, people felt that maybe she painted the home care industry with a broad brush and almost scaring people into not wanting to use home care, scaring them into saying that if you bring somebody into your home, that there is the good chance that you might be scammed, be stolen from, or abused. And I don't necessarily think that is the case. I think the overwhelming amount of home care companies in Massachusetts are trying to do the right thing. Are there mistakes made? Are caregivers make me want to rip my hair out sometimes? Without a doubt. But overall, I think that the intentions are good.
Yeah, I think a lot of what she brought out was talking about the gray side.
Underground market. Where you hire somebody private.
And, you know, you hear stories, someone could probably write a similar factual article on landscaping or any other home service job. There are reputable people, and then there are people that are working privately and on the side, and they may not be trained, and they may be taken advantage.
Absolutely. So it can become a problem, it can become an issue, and I think she brought light to that subject.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think it was overall a good article to educate people on. I think you kind of feel the same way.
I do.
But I thought we needed to do a reaction to that. That was part one. And part two of this two-part series is talking about where a lot of these caregivers are coming from. Now, if you look at part one and there's on the website, there is a list of faces, basically mugshots, really, of 20 or so home care workers. And it's about a 50-50 split of Caucasians to people of color.
Yes.
That is not our experience at Minute Women. Most of our employees are people of color. Most of them come from Uganda or from somewhere over in Africa. And we don't have as many white caregivers as maybe other people do, whatever the demographics of whoever responds to our ads. We do get some clients that ask for Caucasian, but we let them know that that's not a guarantee and more than likely will not happen because of the demographics that we have, and some of them decide to try a caregiver and realize and hope in hopes that their parent generally will be accepting of them, or they move on to another agency because there's no there's no guarantee. We can't promise that. And we have to find qualified people. And it's almost guaranteed that you don't get your pick of what nationality somebody is.
Yeah, and you can go to the next agency, and in a lot of cases, you're probably going to be faced with the same situation because that is just the environment that we're in. One thing I always encourage anyone that's looking for home care is, if in fact race is an issue, be up front with the people that you're calling. People will often call in and they'll say, well, where is the person from? And I'll say Waltham, and there's a pause. And I know that's not really what they're asking for.
Correct.
And you want to just, right up front, I will say, is a person of color going to be an issue? Because you don't want to make promises you can't keep, and you don't want to have expectations.
And then you don't want to put a caregiver in a situation in which they're going to be verbally abused because of their nationality and their skin tone.
Exactly.
And it is difficult because, you know, a lot of these adult children are embarrassed to talk about it because they're not inherently bigoted themselves, but you know, and it's tough to admit that maybe your parent has some less than desirable qualities and traits about them. So I understand where they're coming from when it comes with those difficult conversations. So with that being said, we don't need to rehash the whole article. You can listen to the podcast from yesterday if you want to hear that. But the reason we're bringing this up is part two came out earlier this week, and we got a chance to read it and go over it. And overall, it focuses on a woman named Rita Serapong. She is from Ghana. It sounds like she lives in the Newton area, or that's where she works, or they talked about Newton. Newton's maybe two towns south of Lexington. It's a 10, 15-minute drive on 95. And it goes through how, I mean, I'm not going to go through a word for word just like I did, because I basically know this because I know caregivers. Basically, caregivers are working multiple jobs. They're running on very little sleep, and a lot of the money that they're making is going back to their home country to support their family and their friends, and they are living paycheck to paycheck. And this article talks about that these individuals are overworked, they can get injured, they can get burned out, and it's a quote-unquote problem in the industry that we have to acknowledge and deal with. Would you say that's kind of the synopsis of that article?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we think of a 40 or 50 hour work week as a big work week for the average American, and 140 hours or something to that nature is common with the caregivers. I mean, they are workaholics.
Absolutely. And they're all looking for more hours. They're always looking to get as much money as they can. And that's why they're registered with multiple agencies, like we've talked about in previous podcasts on how the home care agency model works. So yesterday, Janet, I kind of started out with my monologue on how I thought about things. Well, how about you start with your monologue on what your takeaways were from this and what your feelings were on this?
Well, I thought that the second part was really a good snapshot of the lives of a lot of caregivers in this industry. They are folks that, like you mentioned, they're sending a large chunk of what they make, which is not a large salary, back home. They're either sending money home. In one part of the article, it referred to someone that went to a junkyard and bought a car that had been totaled and shipped the car home, and then the husband put the pieces together. You know, the life for these folks is one where, you know, we take public education for granted. Kids don't go to school free there. They have to pay for classes. They have to pass tests to just get through different schools. And it's very common for the caregiver to be here, and maybe a child is here, but the other part of the family, which is often an extended family, is back in the other country trying to eke out a living. And their culture is very family oriented, and it is an honor, a requirement, a privilege, an expectation, whatever you want to call it, to care for elders, and that's what they do. And they also tend to be very spiritual and religious people, and that is part of who they are and their gift. And in addition to paying the bills that they have to pay and pay for rent here and things like that, they also pay significant amounts of money or a tithe to their church. And many of them believe that if as long as they faithfully pay their tithe, even if they're not working, that God will look out for them. And if they lose a job, he will help them find another one. And that's how locked in they are to what they do. And I think that's something that people just don't realize. And, you know, there's also right now added pressure because of all the things that you're hearing about with immigration, that, you know, they live in a very uncertain world. And they never know when a job is going to end because the person either gets better, goes to an assisted living, passes away, and they wait for the next job. And they're not getting paid time in between those jobs. So it's really a very uncertain world they live in.
Absolutely. And there were a lot of that's a great point. You make great points on every point, this article. This article is a very much, to me, kind of a human interest piece on what a Ghanaian caregiver and what a caregiver goes through in the Massachusetts area. I won't argue against any of the facts. I'm sure it's all absolutely true. There are some things, though, with it on the business side, being an owner, that did drive me a little nuts. And I think you probably know the one that's going to drive me the most amount of nuts, is that in Article 1, Linda talks about how she can't afford to pay an agency for a caregiver. So she goes to the underground market, or the gray market, as she calls it, and then finds and hires her own caregiver, in which she has repeated issues with each caregiver and realizes that her expectations and what she's going to get are wildly different, and she is extraordinarily disappointed with the results because of that. In Article 2, she has a human interest piece that's basically, in so many ways, saying we're not paying our caregivers enough money.
Yep.
To me, it's talking out both sides of your mouth.
Absolutely. And to pay more, which, boy, wouldn't you like to be able to offer them more? We look at how the healthcare system is trying not to just fold under its own weight of healthcare costs, and they're not going to go down. And yet these people are working, and they are, for the most part, not U.S. citizens, or working on their citizenship.
Sure.
So it's... yeah, it's an awkward situation. And, you know, we don't disagree that it takes a lot of money to have someone live at home.
Yes.
And yet it's not, I think sometimes there's the idea that that money, or that people such as yourself being a CEO are living on Easy Street. And that is not the case.
Listen, my lifestyle of living is obviously dramatically better than the average caregiver's lifestyle. I mean, I get paid more than the caregiver does. I mean, that's just the way that is. It's the way that this capitalism works, and the structure of owning a company is that, you know, I have more risk and that reaps more reward. Just like I said in the last, I am not opposed to paying people more money. I don't have an issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm not going to tolerate somebody complaining about how expensive my services are after they've said we just needed to pay our caregivers more money. Any money that I give to the caregivers, I have to recoup on the back end, which is passed along to the customers. It's just, it's how it works. With the tariffs that are going on in this trade war with China, those tariffs go up, the manufacturers have to pass the costs on to the people that are buying the cars, or the air conditioners, or the refrigerators, or whatever is taking aluminum and steel. And then the customers certainly get the choice, and whether they want to buy the new refrigerator or they want to buy the high end, the mid grade, the low end, they have to make that decision. And obviously, the lower the cost is for the end user, the more end users you're going to get, the more you're going to sell, in theory. Now, that was my biggest thing with this, was that I agree that we don't pay our teachers and our caregivers and the people that are the most dependent on needing help, we do not pay very much money into in this country. For whatever reason, little Jackson, on average, probably seems to get more care and than some of the adults we have in this country and the children we have in this country. I agree that that is a problem. But at the same time, you know, when somebody calls us up and asks our what our prices are, and it's between that $25 and $35 an hour range that the last article talked about, there are some people that say there's just absolutely no way that I can. It's not even a it's the conversation's over. There's no way that I can afford that amount of money.
Right. And yet, if we go back to the first chapter of this article, the author is talking about, you know, the fact that there's no oversight of the staff and training and all these other things for the people that you hire privately off of Craigslist or whatever else. Well, agencies such as ours, you know, part of the cost of doing business is making sure we carry the insurance if someone breaks something or makes a mistake or there's an issue or, you know, workers' comp or things like that. So that's just the cost of keeping healthy, good caregivers out there.
Absolutely. So now we have two sides of the story. You have the business owner side, which I'm representing, and then you have somebody that's been a caregiver, a family caregiver in Linda, and couldn't afford agency services, that went to the gray market and was complaining about the cost. And now in her second article, she's writing about how the caregivers here do get paid more money than they would over in Ghana, which is without a doubt. They are sending a lot of money over to Ghana.
20% of their economy, I think, right now is tied to caregivers.
So that's not necessarily a negative thing.
No.
We're positively impact. We're employing people. Those people are able to take money and send it over to a family member or friends to be able to buy items, to be
educate them,
to be able to assist with the cost of living over there. That's why these people are doing. I mean, that's why it's going on. And I'm glad that we're able to help out in that respect. Some other things that did get to me was if you're with the tithing was something that got to me a little bit as well. I am not a religious person. I don't try to get into the politics and religions of things, but I'm not a huge fan of organized religion in general. I think the last 20 years speak for themselves in the Massachusetts area, maybe why I'm not a huge fan of that. When you're giving your, it is your choice to give away $250 a week or whatever that, I forget what that number
is, like
200 and something dollars a month or whatever that number was, that's real money. That's money that can be used on a lot of different things. And if you choose to give that away, you by all means have that right to do it. But in this article, I understand that in their culture, it's non-negotiable.
That's right.
But it is negotiable. Well, it is a choice in some way, shape, or form to write that check.
Well, yes and no. And this is, and you know, I also, having grown up in this area, but am part of an established religion.
That's fine.
And I am struggling with a lot of what's going on right now. But that is part of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That is their tie to their spirit,
mm-hmm.
their soul, if you will. And it is the very same soul that brings out the best in the caregivers. And they are the ones that are, they want them to be happy, and they have a true belief that it is their purpose. It is a mission to care for this elderly person the same as if it was their own grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that is hardwired in is the same mindset that when they are paying a tithe to their church, they are honoring the church that they belong to. They are, that's the thing that they need to do.
Absolutely. For God. And to play devil's advocate up against myself, just like you're doing, or not devil's advocate, but you do. A lot of these folks that are in these churches that don't make a lot of money, when somebody is in need of that, it's almost like an insurance contract. when somebody's in need that's in their community church, everybody comes together and helps that person in need.
Yep.
So that you have the peace of mind knowing that when you might be in need, you have 50 or 100 or however many people, 20 people that are going to come together and try to help you out and support you as much as possible.
And you owe them because they helped you.
Because they helped you, you owe them, and vice versa. I understand that. And maybe that evens out over time. I don't know the true economics of that. But my initial reaction was, that's real money. And and that's real money that can be used for other things if somebody were so inclined to adjust the way that they budgeted their allocation of income. So that was one thing that struck with me, but I think that's what's good about you and I is that one, we try to see other sides of things and, you know, hey, listen, that there's many different perspectives of the story on how somebody should be living their life in one of these situations. And that is a very good point. A lot of our caregivers are very spiritual. A lot of them, and listen, I said, I'm not a fan of organized religion. I didn't say I'm not a fan of gods or beliefs or belief systems. It's just been a little difficult over the last 15, 20 years with what's been going on in the Catholic Church to be like full board. Hey guys, we're big fans over here.
As a Catholic, I can agree with
it's
you.
It's been very difficult in yeah. not seeing in keeping those rose colored glasses on in that scenario. And it's not funny, but it's certainly been a very difficult pill to swallow in that sense. Now, one of the other things that is interesting to talk about is that you're dealing with a huge amount of a population that is needing help, meaning the baby boomers are aging. There are more baby boomers than there are with caregivers. There are just not enough caregivers to go around for what people are looking for. And because of that, these caregivers are working huge amount of hours. And what is in talking about in this article is that the pay in Massachusetts isn't very good. The average pay, I don't know if it was the mean or the median, because I know, you know, there certainly is a difference. The median, it says hourly pay is nationally $11.03 and then $12.77 in Massachusetts. With the low pay exacerbated by inconsistent work hours. And that was the other thing that I wanted to mention that struck to me in this article to be clear on how our industry works. We have full-time equivalent people, but none of our caregivers are full-time employees that are going, they get paid when they're out in the field working, and when they're not out in the field working, they don't get paid. That's how we're able to keep the cost lower than what they already are. If I had a staff of 10 or 15 or 20 people
that
I had to pay downtime for, and I had to have them on the clock at all times for when a call comes in so they could be out there immediately, the cost would be substantially higher.
Yes.
Substantially higher. I would say double higher, if not more. That was the model in which this industry worked. The idea is that the amount of people that are out in the field are getting paid money when they're working, and when they're not getting paid, and that's why they work for multiple people. And because of this, most families do not want to incur overtime, understandably, because they're cost conscious. It's already expensive in their opinion, and they don't want to pay time and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Not a surprise there, but also it goes back to the beginning of this part one where people think this is already too expensive for what they're getting. They don't want to pay time and a half to have a caregiver there for more than 40 hours. So then you have multiple caregivers on a job. And so when a caregiver is getting paid, generally the max that they get paid is 36 hours because they work 12-hour shifts. Three shifts in a row equals 36 hours. So they can't be there for those extra 4 hours. They then find work with another agency that yep. they can provide care for. Jackson, keep it quiet down there. Barking at something. And because of this, they work for two or three different agencies at a time. And because of this, they don't get much sleep. Now, Janet, I'll let you talk about the sleep part because we do have policies in place with what we do know about and we try to eliminate that, but not all agencies are like that. So when you're talking with caregivers and you find out, you hear those certain magical phrases, what is your reaction and your questions to it?
Well, you know, when you hear that a lot of people that will call in looking to work with us, they're looking for nights. Well, the reason they're working for nights is they probably already have 36 hours or more through two agencies, and they're looking to fill the other part. And as a result, you have to ask, when do you sleep? And, you know, if you have a good relationship with staff, and I talk with a lot of the aides about this and say, okay, so you're doing this, or are you not available after this time? Is this another job that you have? And they're always reluctant to tell you because they know exactly what I'm not saying. When do you sleep? With some positions, there can be sleeping overnight assignments, and that's based on certain criteria with the clients that they're probably okay, but they want someone in the house. But two 12-hour shifts, that night shift needs to be awake. And I was just out supervising one this morning, and the night person said she was up and she was agitated and she was walking around, and she said, you know, it was a long night. She said, I went from sitting in a nice soft chair to sitting in a hard chair just to make sure I stayed alert. And apparently she had had another day job or something beforehand with another agency. We don't know. But at least, you know, I think if you have good relationship with caregivers, for the most part, you can get some honesty out of them. And it was a matter of that person knew that that client needed to be watched like a hawk. And she did that. And that makes it very hard. And what I try and encourage is, okay, you know, I understand the industry we're in, but you have to remember you can't go without sleep for very long, because you're going to get sick, something's going to happen, and you're not going to be able to earn a paycheck that you need to send home or whatever else. So I think that, you know, we try and show that we understand, but at the same time, the number one priority has to be the client. So we very often staff such, we don't staff two 12-hour shifts back-to-back with somebody. We just don't do it.
Or in a situation where we find out, like you just said, that somebody is doing a 24-hour day, that doesn't happen anymore. Like,
correct.
You know, once we find that out, that's, hey, listen, you can't do that anymore. That's something that is unacceptable. Listen, can anybody stay up for 24 hours in a row for one night? Yeah, I mean, everybody's done that before. You're tired, you get home, and you crash. But the idea that you're going to stay up night after night after night while working the daytime, one of your clients is going to get that short end of the stick, and more than likely, it's going to be the nighttime client. Mm-hmm. And the last thing we want to get a call from is a client that says, hey, your caregiver slept through while my father got up, tried to use the bathroom on his own, fell, and now is in the hospital. That is an unacceptable situation to occur. And the best way we can find out by eliminating that is asking them what's going on during the day, making sure that they're going to ask, are you going home to go to sleep? Listen, I understand you might not be getting 8 full hours of sleep, but you need to be getting something. And I'm not talking 1 or 2 hours. You need to be getting 4, 5, 6 hours, something that is at least gives you time to restart. Now, there are people out there that only need 4 hours of sleep. I am not one of them. But as long as a caregiver is getting, you know, 5 or 6 hours or whatever it might be, I understand that they can function. And I know that they can function because I've done that. Mm-hmm. I've been in when my first job when I moved out to Colorado was cutting fish. And I had the good shift of cutting fish between, I would get to work, I forget now, between 2 and 3 in the morning, probably 2 o'clock and 2 or 3 in the morning, and then I would stay till about 11 or 12. Maybe I get an hour of overtime or whatever it was. Yeah, I forget. That was considered the good shift. That was the best shift you could have. And I would sit there and I was sorting oysters at the time. We'd sort oysters, and then those oysters would then go out to the different markets and Stop and Shops and Wegmans or whatever they are, Safeways out in the grocery stores. And I would talk with the guys at break time or at lunchtime, whatever you want to call it, at, you know, 8 in the morning or 7 in the morning. And I was like, hey, what do you do? You know, he goes, yeah, I go to bed at 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. And go, what time do you get up? I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. Been doing it for 10 years.
Yep.
How do you do that? Well, I got to do it because my kids are on a 7 in the morning to 8 o'clock at night schedule, you know. Yep. Put the kids down, and then I want to spend some time with my significant other, get to know them a little bit, you know. And then
who are you?
And then I go to bed by 10 o'clock. I crash by 10, and then the alarm goes off at 2:30, whatever time it was. You know, these people were getting 4 hours of sleep, and they were dealing with a sharp knife slicing hundreds of salmon per day. And so it isn't impossible to live that lifestyle because many people do it. But it's not ideal, but you have to give your body some type of rest. You have mm-hmm. to do it. And so when we find out that a caregiver is not able to do that for more than one night, you know, there's always exceptions to a rule. And certainly every agency said, hey, listen, if you can do it this one time and then go home, get sleep, fine, we can manage that. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, that tends to happen in our rare cases when there's a snowstorm.
Yes.
And somebody can't get in.
Exactly.
That kind of thing.
But when we find out a caregiver's working for two different agencies and they're doing 12-hour shifts, that is an immediate red flag to us that they're going to probably be sleeping through the night shift, and we got to take them off the case immediately and find a replacement for them. So the reason we bring that up is because this article talks about how a lot of these caregivers are working on slow weeks, like 100 hours a week. So they're they're working over two full-time jobs per week mm-hmm. to make money come in. And because most people don't know this, there's 168 hours in a week. We know this because our whole industry runs on hours. That's how we determine if we're going to have a good week or not. If we hit a certain amount of hours, we know that we're going to be profitable, or if we're not hitting a certain amount of hours, we know we're not going to be profitable. So everything runs around hours. So there's 160 hours in a week. So you have 100 on a slow week, you're working 100 hours. That leaves you 68 hours to get sleep, to do your grocery shopping, to do whatever chores you do, and then to get the proper as much sleep as you can.
And to get to and from your job.
And to give you an idea, because you know math was not my strong suit, that means that you have 9.71 hours per day to yourself.
Yep.
Usually takes a person half an hour to an hour to get to work every single day. So you're talking, there's an hour or 2 hours gone. So now you're down to 7.7 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the average person needs 8 hours of sleep. So you're already losing an hour of sleep right there.
That's right. And a number of caregivers do not drive. So they are taking public transportation, which is generally not the most efficient way to get to places. And that's another challenge to the industry, because a lot of the people like we have that, you know, have the means to pay for private care, they live in a home that's not on a bus line. So they're paying Uber or whatever else.
Or they're carpooling with a car.
Or they're carpooling.
Use it, something like that.
Or if they are taking a bus to a certain point, you know, they've got connections or whatever. They spend a lot of time just getting to and from.
Yeah. So to give you the idea, if you're paying a caregiver, let's just use the numbers here. If the average caregiver is getting $12.77 an hour, and the average home care agency is charging $25 an hour, let's just say we're going to go on the low ends because that's encompassing a lot of Western Massachusetts that doesn't make as much money as the Boston area, but you're dealing with less people, whatever.
To keep it simple.
Keep it simple. If you're paying somebody that $10 extra an hour gross profit is going towards paying, like we talked about, the salaries of the office staff, the rent, the insurances, and statutory benefits. In Massachusetts, that's, you know, now includes health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying health insurance on people on MassHealth. You're paying their insurances in general, you're paying their Social Security, and you're paying their payroll taxes, as well as their all those other things that you're dealing with. Right. So,
and the rate that the caregiver is getting paid, that's a gross amount.
Yes.
They have their taxes taken out and all the rest of that.
Correct. So you're dealing with that there's not a huge amount. This isn't This isn't the Apple iPhone where you know, Apple has $100 billion like overseas in some Swiss bank that they just don't want to bring over to the U.S. because they don't want to get taxed on. You know, there's clearly an issue with this low wage labor. I understand that, but the more you pay people, the more that things are going to get expensive. And in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. we just had the fight for 15 went through. That's fine. People deserve to make more money. Overall, I'm not angry about it. But also, let's not forget the fact that it's going to affect everyone, where your groceries are going to go up, your anything that employs anybody other than robots, mm-hmm. the costs are going to go up because the wages just went up. When I went over to Portugal a few years ago, everything was cheaper over in Portugal. It's not because boats cost less. It's because wages are lower over there. And that way, the meals are lower. To manufacture the boat and bring it over to the U.S. doesn't cost any less for Portugal than it costs for England. For the United States. It's that the people that are running the boats get paid 30-40% less than what they do in the United States, and thus the meals are 30-40% less. The groceries are 30-40%. It all passes down. So as they go up, the rates are going to go up, and the mm-hmm. prices are going to go up. So.
Well, and you, I believe it said something in the article what the average cost was of a housekeeper in a hotel in Boston, and how they make quite a bit more than a caregiver. And you would think, oh my goodness, you know, look at what a caregiver is expected to know and whatever else. Well, a hotel in Boston has the, if they need to pay more people and if they're within a union or whatever, they the hotel has to absorb that cost, but they have the ability to work with other things within their company to offset that cost.
Yeah, I mean they have upsells that they can do, and they have food and beverage and all those various
exactly.
other things that do cost more money, that bring in more money, excuse me. So yeah, there's certainly different verticals that you can have to bring in more money. And revenue, but at the end of the day, you're dealing with this industry is really just its base is providing human services to
it's
people.
Staffing. It's qualified staffing.
So that was what was interesting, and it's a good read. I mean, there's nothing in this article that's wrong. I mean, they're absolutely right on many different things. You know, these caregivers, they do live in the tougher neighborhoods or the Section 8 housings or in some situations they live in multiple people share a small apartment because they're trying to save as much money so they can bring a lot of that back to their residents in Ghana or wherever it is in Africa or Haiti or the Dominican or wherever it might be. They're doing this for a reason. So it's an interesting article. It's worthwhile reading, but mm-hmm. I also thought there were some things that stuck out to me that were contradictory of themselves between the first article and the second article. Listen, if you have a way of explaining to me and showing to me how you can pay caregivers or pay anybody six figures to do work and not charge the end users an absurd amount of money to offset the cost of paying these caregivers or these teachers or these nurses or the food delivery person, it doesn't matter who you're talking about. Yeah. With some of these wages in which we feel maybe people don't get paid what it should be worth to society, I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm.
But right now the model that we have is that it is a per diem model. People go out and when they are working, they get paid, and when they come back, they don't get paid. And until that model can change, that's where it's at right now. And I see that it's going to be tougher to be able to just give a caregiver $20-$25 an hour. It's probably not going to happen because that's what they're paying somebody under the table, because you're cutting out the middleman, which is somebody like me.
Right.
But you're also taking some risks and liberties with that.
Training and insurance and all the rest of that. So, yeah.
And so, I mean, and it's in the next podcast we're going to do is going to be a lot shorter on this, because it's going to be talking about retirees filling the workforce gap, because home care companies are so desperate to find caregivers that to offset the amount of people that need it. So that's just something to think about. I'm sure this one was certainly a little bit more politically charged, or if you will, you know, it deals with more things. But that's our reaction to it. My reaction to it is obviously different from Janet's, because we're coming from two totally different perspectives. So hopefully you can appreciate that. But at the end of the day, it's a difficult situation. You know, I look at payroll like taxes. I would love to have to pay $5 million a year in taxes. I'd love to have to pay $1 million a year in taxes, because if I paid $1 million a year in taxes, it means I made a lot more than $1 million.
That's right.
I would love to pay a caregiver $1,000 an hour. That's because I'm able to charge a certain amount for that. But, you know, but is an end user going to be able to afford that? And that's where we're really hitting in an area in Massachusetts, and I'm sure other parts of the country, where, you know, the caregivers rightfully deserve raises. They deserve more money. Absolutely. Not disagreeing with it. But what happens if we reach, what is the tipping point between we give caregivers more money, so we have to charge customers more money, and then all of a sudden the caregivers start losing work because there's not enough business to support the
That's
caregivers'
right.
wages.
And then, which could be a whole nother podcast unto itself, this huge population that is aging, dementia is a very huge part of it. And I think for all of us, it's easier to comprehend the idea that it costs so much to fix a broken leg or to do a surgery. But when you're spending money to have someone that's properly trained to be, as I tell you all the time, a lifeguard, because the person physically may not be that limited, but mentally they are, they're seeing all this money being spent for someone just to be there.
Yeah.
And that's a very hard thing to wrap your head around.
It is. And we've talked to, and I know we've talked about this on the podcast, where we speak with people who have fall issues. We talk with their families, and they are sitting there. You can see it in their eyes. They are trying to weigh in their eyes how much care they can get for the amount of money, while also figuring out the hours in which that person is most at risk. And it is not a shameful thing to think about. It is completely understandable, because anybody can fall 24 hours a day. It can happen at any time. And a lot of them are, you know, everybody goes, well, they sleep at night. A lot of it happens at night.
Mm-hmm.
So when are the hours during the day in which you need to have care? You should have care. And then it would be nice to have care. You know, the three must-haves, the would likes and don't needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people have to weigh those options, and it's completely understandable. But here's the thing. The two biggest reasons people call us up in private home care is dementia and fall prevention.
Absolutely.
So it feels like a no-win situation, because you need the hours, but if you can't afford the hours, or you can afford them, but you're trying to make the money last as long as possible, which is completely understandable.
Yep.
And you're sitting there, and also another thing that's understandable, just because we're going on a tangent, it's also understandable to be frustrated that you're spending money on services where you thought that money was going to go to you.
Mm-hmm.
You may have talked to your parents and they said, I want you to have every last dime of what I've worked so hard for. I want you to put your kids through college. I want you to pay off your house. I want you to do something that's going to make your life easier. And then you find yourself writing a check every month to an assisted living or a nursing home or a private agency, watching your inheritance dwindle away.
And you can't even tell them, because they're going to feel really bad. They think the money's going to you.
Absolutely. So
very hard.
So that's another non-shameful thing to think about and to be honest about, where you're seeing that inheritance that maybe you had already said, like, listen, I don't have to worry about college for Matthew and Stacy because I've got it covered. And then all of a sudden, Matthew and Stacy are 15 and you're dropping 30 grand a month on a nursing home. And
yep.
you're still like, this money's gone, and we got to figure out another situation for Matthew and Stacy. I can understand somebody being rip-roaring, pissed at the world because
yeah,
of that situation.
Yeah, I mean, people think to save money for a college fund. We don't think to save money for daycare or a nursing home fund.
Yep. So yeah. Anyways, I mean, that's a little bit of a tangent, and this one kind of went not as long, but longer. But it's worth the read. The article is called The U.S. Has a Huge Need for Home Health Care, and Many from Ghana Do the Hard Work. It focuses on people that are in Ghana, Worcester-based, which is about 45 minutes to an hour outside of Boston.
Ghana town.
apparently it's called Donnatown in some circles. But it is a good point because there are a lot of people out there and that are going to experience this in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with my parents down in Florida, it seemed that it was we had it's been so long again. We had a mix. We had some Caucasians. We had a, I would say it was closer to a 60-40, 50-50 split in Florida than it is up here.
And I would think Hispanic, I would think, you know, from the islands down that way, Haiti, you know, and there's a Mecca in Montreal that comes in. That's where a lot of Haitians came in and then came into the United States from there.
Yep.
So when you think about it, it's their community. It's their home away from home.
And this article also, like, you know, maybe one thing we talked more. This article, you know, talks about this woman, Rita, who has not taken a week without work for 12 years. I mean, this woman is a hardworking person. And my guess is Linda was doing this as a second article in part to show that there are good caregivers out there.
To help balance it out.
Maybe balance out the first one. Like, hey, listen, I ripped home care workers in this first one. Like, we got on them, and we were giving them body blows and TKOs here.
Yep.
Let's do one and show what a good caregiver looks like and what it is. And Rita, from this description, seems like a caregiver that any home care company would be absolutely thrilled to have on their staff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know her. Maybe she's not as good as, but it sounds that way. Now, And it is fair, and it is absolutely necessary to show what an average caregiver looks like, how hard they work, what their life is, and what it is here. The other thing this article brings back is some of these caregivers are only here temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
They are here to do exactly what they're doing, which is to come here, make money, live as cheaply as possible, send their kids through college through grade school for
or even college yeah.
Right? For those 20 years or however their system is over
there. They're paying for their weddings and the whole thing.
And then they're back home. So there are positive things to take out of this. The caregivers are getting... Now, does everybody want to make more money? Of course. You know, he's not alive
anymore. Provide more.
Steve Jobs want to make more money, even though he's dead. I forget the guy that... Tim Cook? Of course he does. Everybody seems to want to make more money. There doesn't seem to be an end for that thirst, which is a whole number... another conversation, but the system in some cases is working. It's just whether are we willing to pay the caregivers more money and then thus charge the clients more money to be able to afford those services. The insurance is going up, the office staff gets their raises, the bonuses and various things, and rents go up, electricity goes up, everything has gone up. I can attest to that. I can promise you there has yet to be a bill that has gone down. And that's okay. You know, business is good. So that's part of the economy growing. But
and it's an opportunity to hire more people.
Absolutely.
I think one of my biggest takeaways from the whole article, both parts all put together, is, you know, you read the paper, you watch the news, regardless of what your politics are. People have come to form opinions and thoughts about the U.S. healthcare system and Medicare and Medicaid and Obamacare or not Obamacare. This is a whole huge and rapidly growing piece of healthcare that doesn't fit into the category of Medicare and Medicaid. I mean, some of it is paid for into the system, but the vast majority of it is out of your pocket.
Absolutely.
And you don't hear about that being talked about on a federal level. And I think Massachusetts talks about it a bit more, but then we're kind of a healthcare mecca here.
Yeah.
But my biggest takeaway is this is a whole huge chunk of healthcare that we don't often talk about.
Absolutely. And it's only going to grow bigger. You have 10,000 Americans that will turn 65 every day until 2030. So 2030 isn't when it really ends. It's when it's probably in the middle of it. My point being is that most average 65-year-olds are probably playing golf or still working or still going to the gym, you know, whatever it is. They
and
don't need private home healthcare.
As of age 65 going forward, people average one fall a year.
There we go. There's interesting, huh?
There you go.
So, but my point
love
is
these
that
statistical people.
That I would say that our average age client is not under 70. It's usually
correct.
70 to 80 years old, or mm-hmm. 73 to 83, or whatever that number is.
God bless those that are 100.
God bless the ones that are 100. So my point is, even when in 2030, on January 1st, whatever the date is, 2030, when that final 65-year-old turns, or December 31st, 2030, when that final 10,000th American turns 65, you still probably have another 10 years until those people are, on average, needing some type of help.
Yep, and I don't remember the stats, so I don't want to misquote something, but I heard somewhere it's going to be dementia-related. People suffering from some form of dementia will exceed all deaths related to cancer.
There you go. So
that's a big number.
It's a big number. So the point is that this is a good article. It brings up a lot of really good points. It's worthwhile reading because these caregivers work hard. These caregivers are family centric. They are trying to better their own lives and better their own families, whether it's in this country or in another country. They are spiritual, they are religious, and they believe in that. We talked about whether or not that's a good thing, that how it affects their money, but it is who they are. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a snapshot of what a caregiver looks like. Not everybody's like that, but I recognize this caregiver and many of our caregivers that we have. But overall, they're good people trying to work hard, and they are hustling to make ends meet for not only themselves here, but for their loved ones over in Africa. Yep.
They're stepping up to do the tedious, frustrating, and unpleasant tasks that a lot of people don't want to do.
And I had a meeting with somebody yesterday that I will not, because they said anything bad, but I said, you have to treat your caregivers with respect, and you have to appreciate them and care about them because they are your business. Without the caregivers, you're out of business real fast,
mm-hmm.
real fast. And this company, it lives and dies on them. And we've been living for 50 years on that because we've been treating our caregivers with respect, with gratitude, and paying them what we can pay them as a fair wage within this industry. So that's kind of where we're at right now. Read the article, and I will get done with my rambling.
We'll ramble about something
else later on.
There you go.
Have a good one, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.